Okay, so here we have Gary Bader, and it is the 29th of May. You don't need to speak up. These should be just fine. And Gary, I don't have a clue as to what you do and what part you played in the oil spill response. So why don't you just tell me how you heard about the oil spill and what those days immediately thereafter were like for you?
At the time of the oil spill, I was the human resource manager for Alyeska Pipeline. And part of my responsibility was managing safety and fire protection. And I heard about it because of the safety aspect. My safety people in Valdez called me and told me what had happened. So that's how I became aware of the spill itself. The first reaction was one of, I think we were almost stunned. Mm-hmm. We were surprised that not only that it happened, but it could happen. Our culture at the time was one of believing that it wouldn't happen. It mm-hmm. couldn't happen. There were too many safeguards in place.
I can see the red light. Okay.
So that was my immediate reaction. The second reaction was that it wouldn't take long to clean it up, that we'd have it cleaned up in 3 or 4 days, so it's not such a big deal, even though there was a lot of oil. We knew there was a lot of oil. We had no idea that, in fact, we weren't ready. That the equipment was, a lot of the equipment was up on the beach being repaired, in for maintenance, wasn't ready to go, and so we weren't there.
Must have gone down pretty hard on you.
It did. That was a bad time in Alyeska for a lot of us. And then I remember a meeting with our president, George Nelson, who called all of the managers together in the cafeteria in Berga. And essentially what he said was it wasn't our fault. The fact of the Exxon hitting a rock wasn't our fault. The fact that it wasn't cleaned up in time wasn't our fault. And many of us couldn't swallow that. I mean, here we were in the largest oil spill in recent history, or maybe all of history in the U.S., and it wasn't our fault. Anyway, that was the reaction.
So did you say that you were living in Valdez at
no,
the time?
No, I was living in Anchorage. My office was in Berga. Oh. And I had safety people in Valdez up and down the pipeline and a few in Anchorage. I had the, of course, all the firemen in Valdez and up and down the pipeline and the health, all the paramedics and the medics on the pipeline and the company doctor and nurse reported to me. As well as employment and records and training. Must have been something else. But I've been gone for 12 years, so I'm hoping to forget some of this.
Yeah, well, hopefully this is the first time you'll have to go through
yeah.
it. So describe those first few days for me.
Chaos. I never overflew the Exxon Valdez. I let the people in the field do their job. Although I was in Valdez, I never went out to the ship. In fact, on a personal note, I had a 34-foot boat at the time in Seward, and about day five or so, I got a call from Vico asking me to lease my boat, and I said, nah, this is not going to take long. I don't want you messing my boat up. Talk about a mistake. Well, chaos. trying to figure out who was in charge. We didn't have unified command at the time, so we had Exxon, we had the Coast Guard, we had the DEC, Alyeska, all kind of working independently. And Alyeska moved fairly quick, but it wasn't quick enough, you know. 3 days wasn't quick enough. I think it was 3 days. I could be wrong on that. To get our barge off the beach. But my focus at the time was safety and fire protection. We had not yet even discussed dispersants or anything. We're just trying to get our arms around the thing. You know, it just, it, as you probably know, it was okay for the first couple of days until that wind came up. And then it all went to hell in a handbasket.
Tell me more about that. I don't know that.
Oh, well, the oil was coming out of the ship, and I know this from videos, even though I wasn't there personally. Oil was coming out of the ship. We had some boom out, and the oil was relatively contained around the ship. By that time, I believe the second tanker was either alongside or coming close to coming alongside to offload the oil off the Exxon Valdez. And then a north wind came through, as north winds do in March in Valdez, and just blew that oil everywhere. Just blew it everywhere. I mean, it was gone. It was out of control at that point. There was no amount of boom was going to keep that in. So the window of opportunity was in the first 48 hours. And for the first 48 hours, we were trying to figure out what the hell to do. Not do it, but figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And we became in Alyeska. I can't figure out the best way to say this. We became insulated within ourselves. Instead of moving outward to get the help we needed, we moved inward. You know, we were just getting the crap beat out of us everywhere.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, appropriately so, but we didn't like it much.
No.
So we went, you know, and the timeline and all this is different, but we went from, you know, are you familiar with the red trucks?
No.
Alyeska has red trucks, red pickups. Everything's red. Pickups, the big trucks, the semi, everything was red. We hired rental cars, unmarked, to drive around because we couldn't drive the red trucks around. Because people were throwing rocks and eggs and everything at us. So that's what it was like. The safety people, I have to say, at the time, not because I managed them, because I'm not a safety person. I was a manager in charge of an area that I wasn't technically qualified. I was qualified to manage it, but not to do the work. They did an excellent job. They put in place things like use of respirators. They were doing air testing so that the workers weren't exposed, unduly exposed. They went nationwide to find enough protective equipment, gloves, boots, hats, Tyvek suits, everything they could. They did a stand-up job. I'm talking about the people in Valdez, because the people on the pipeline were still doing their work and they didn't get involved.
But it all took time.
Well, it took time. And the one thing we didn't have was time. We didn't know it then, but looking back at it, how many years?
18
years ago. Wow, how time flies. Seems like yesterday. So that was how I remember it.
So once the contracts began and Exxon began to take more of a participatory role, did things sort of level out in Valdez?
Oh, no. What do you mean level out?
Well, I guess.
I mean, by the time they came in, it was a bona fide disaster everywhere. I mean, there was no leveling out.
Yeah, I guess I was just hoping they'd stop throwing eggs at you.
Oh no, it got worse. It got worse. I mean, the rental cars lasted for months, maybe up to a year. When Exxon arrived, Exxon, the only way Exxon can do, took control of everything, which, quite frankly, suited the heck out of us.
Yeah.
We were understaffed. We weren't staffed up for that. You know, we were trying to operate the terminal and work on the oil spill at the same time, and we didn't have a staff for that. So they brought in their own managers, and they began interfacing with the DEC and the Coast Guard, and everybody was involved, and the feds were there, and even the FBI was there. It didn't level out, but we moved from the front line to the back line, if you will, in terms of our responsibilities. We became more supportive to Exxon. I can remember briefing Exxon. I can remember having our safety people brief their safety people, who I believe was a mix of Exxon and Vico then, because Vico was hiring safety people to come in and pick up the slack. We were quite happy to have them in charge.
Did you ever feel like your life was in jeopardy?
No. You know, unless you got hit on the head with rock, and nobody did, but it was just a feeling of extreme dislike and distrust,
yeah.
Which it was, which is exactly what it was.
So what do you suppose Alyeska was so ill prepared for this? I mean, why was the equipment so inaccessible?
I guess I really don't know why the equipment was inaccessible. My sense was all of us had bought into the what do they call it? This can only happen once in X number of years. And we weren't there yet, so it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, it happened. The equipment was up on the beach being repaired, and it was a scheduled maintenance. I mean, they didn't put it up there because they didn't want to use it. It requires maintenance. Problem was, we didn't have any backup. Or if we had backup, it wasn't available. I don't believe we had backup for the oil spill barge. We didn't have a fishing vessel program in place. We didn't have community relations to speak of in place. Some of the people in Valdez had never been to the village to Titlick. I'm talking about the managers and the public affairs people.
Yeah.
Never been there. The staffing was staffed for operations, not for that kind of catastrophe. Why? I don't know why. We just didn't think it was going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen.
So as time went on, was there any lightning, or was it just always a hideous situation that you couldn't escape?
It went from hideous to really hideous, and for a couple of reasons. After the Exxon Valdez, George Nelson was president, and then his head rolled out the door, and Jim Hermeler became president, and that was a welcome relief. But Jim served his purpose. He established, Jim was, I think, substantially responsible for putting the RCAC into place. And then his head rolled out the door, and David Pritchard came in, and then things went really upside down, because Pritchard came in with a BP mentality. Even though Hermeler was BP, he was an American.
Yeah.
And Alyeska was a really great place to work before that. It was, Alyeska took care of his people took care of Alyeska. pay and benefits were excellent. David Pritchard came in and told everybody, I mean, from the top on down, that you are now responsible for your own destiny. And that was okay. But nobody ever told us what the hell that meant.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And then people were being laid off. And it was about a year and a half after this bill that the job came up of liaison between LESC and the RCAC that I asked for and got. And I liked it because I knew the region. I knew the Prince William Sound. I knew Kodiak. I knew the Kenai Peninsula. I wasn't intimate with any of it, but I knew where my way around. I knew how to get there, and I knew where the villages were, and I knew a couple of the mayors and chiefs. So, but that was, I think that started about a year after the spill, and I was fully in place like a year and a quarter, year and a half after the spill. I called myself the Alyeska's designated target. But we spent a lot of time in the villages and the towns, meeting primarily with mayors and city councils and village councils.
How'd those meetings go in general?
They started off really bad. I mean, it was something you had to do. I mean, you had to get it out on the table. You had to deal with the elephant in the room.
Right.
And I was dealing with it on behalf of Alyeska. I can remember the first RCAC meetings. They almost didn't let me in the room. I had to stand in the doorway.
Out back. Make a quick exit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Those meetings were a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
A lot of emotion.
Yeah, I remember many Homer meetings. That's where I'm from, and every citizen, every person involved with the fisheries wanted to have their testimony be on record, and they would last for hours and hours, and they were just one sad story after another. Mm-hmm. And what could you do? It was just,
well, there was no good that came out of that. Well, there was. There was some good that came out of it. I mean, this organization came out of it.
Right.
This is what they need on the slope right now to deal with BP. The oil spill response, fishing vessel program, all of that came out of it. So, you know, there's some good. They'll be better prepared next time. Tractor tugs didn't come out of it, but it came right after it, you know, because of this organization. In my mind, that's a big benefit to the citizenry in the area. The fact of tractor tugs are a phenomenal piece of equipment.
So you say you've been away from all this for 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
What you been doing?
December of 1995, they put out a package. I raised my hand and got the hell out of there. It wasn't a fun place to work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but I enjoyed my... can't remember how much time it was. This happened in 89. Probably 4 years I was liaison with the RCAC. What have I done for the past 12 years? I'll tell you one thing I haven't done. I have not set foot in Alyeska or BP's office. Not once. I travel, I fish, I hunt, I got a boat and Seward and cabins on some of the rivers and house in Washington.
I'm from Washington.
You are?
Port Angeles.
My house is in a little place called Bay Center, which is just outside of South Bend, Raymond, South Bend.
Yeah, I know that.
About 50 people live in Bay Center, which suits me just fine.
Yeah, that sounds like a good number.
I got an acre on the beach, on the water, not much of a beach.
So I guess The whole Alyeska thing sort of left a bad taste in your mouth.
Alyeska didn't leave a bad taste in my mouth. What happened? Well, it happened after the spill, when BP came in and took over. And quite frankly, what's happened since I left has kind of verified what I thought was going to happen. So do I have a bad taste in my mouth now? Nah, I don't hate anybody for it, you know, but I don't need to. I don't need to go back. And you can never go back anyway. But I see things. In fact, I was just in Valdez. My daughter is a technician at the terminal. And I drove by the convention center. I remember some of the drills we had. Huge drills. Great drills. I just wondered to myself if they have them anymore. And I think they probably don't. If they do, they're very few and far between. And I knew that was going to happen. I know some of the fish and vessel administrators, because I put that program together. We went out and contracted with the fishing boats. We went out and did the training. You know, we didn't buy the boom, but we caused the boom to be purchased. And that was a great program. And I remember talking to one of them, and Alyeska was trying to cut their salaries. They're not salaries. They're on contract for a fixed amount a month. Was trying to cut that back, and I knew that was going to happen. I don't trust oil companies. You know, this thing that happened with BP, and this does not go on record.
Oh, no, that's...
This thing
that's
with BP, totally this thing with BP is no surprise. The fact that they cut back and took a chance rather than do the maintenance and monitoring that they should have. That sort of thing probably doesn't happen at the terminal because of this organization, because you got people looking over their shoulders.
Yeah.
I can remember after, there's a lot of turnover in the oil industry, a lot, at the top level. You know, presidents and vice presidents, it's just a blur sometimes of, They come in, they want to make their mark, you know, and go back to their owner company. But I can remember owners coming in and, you know, I would brief the owners when they'd come in. I was a senior manager. I wasn't vice president, but I was a senior manager on the RCAC. And their question was, why are we doing this? Why are we paying these people a million? At the time, it was 1 million. Or was it 2 million? Anyway, whatever it was, 1 or 2 million a year, and I had these, you know, it's like teaching your kids. You had to start from scratch and explain to them from whence we came, you know, why we're here today. You know, some of them, it's like they never heard of the Exxon Valdez. That was discouraging.
Yes. Well, how did the oil spill, in the larger picture, how do you think it changed Alaska?
Well, I think most Alaskans don't trust oil companies very much. The oil spill, as I said earlier, caused a lot of good things, positive things. It's not good when you have to prepare for a disaster, but it's positive that you're right. Preparedness is better. Oversight is better. I still don't know that the DEC is doing their job, but I don't know that they're not either, because I don't want it. I've had enough of that. I don't watch them anymore. How's it changed Alaska? I think in the long run, it hasn't changed Alaska much, unfortunately. I think Alaskans are just like everybody else. You know, after a while, we become complacent.
Right.
After a while, we get on with our lives and we go do other things. We don't focus on the fact that they're not number of oil spill drills and training exercises with the fishing vessels and the expertise within the oil industry that there perhaps should be. Anyway, that's my take on it.
Okay. How did it change your life?
Well, I got to retire pretty early. Today I don't trust oil companies. I don't trust any big company. I see the value of an organization like this, which is not to say I agreed with everything they did. I didn't. I came close to pulling the plug on this organization a couple of times. Glad I didn't. But they were branching, you, I guess, were branching out in areas that you didn't have, in my view, the authority or responsibility to branch out into. I think I became more jaded, guarded. Don't take what they say as gospel. I won't even say trust, but verify, because I don't trust them. But I'll verify whatever they say if I can. But I don't focus on it.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't focus on it. I got a life to live, and they're paying you people a lot of money to watch, so I don't have to, which is good. Is Joe Banda still here?
Yeah, he's over in the office. Right.
Is he?
Then, yeah.
I always liked Joe.
Yeah, he's a good
Joe's
guy.
A good man.
Yep. Yeah, no, I'm actually not an RCAC employee. I'm just a contracted person to put this book together.
Homer was one of my least favorable places to go.
How's that?
Oh, they were upset to Homer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I met a lot of great people, though. Jerome Selby in Kodiak, Gary Komkoff in Tetlik. Oh, I can't remember the lady's name in Chinega Bay, the vice president. Evans. What's her last name?
Komkoff in
Tetlik.
Tetlik.
Jerome Selby in Kodiak. Harry Gregoire in Homer always treated me decently, even though he wanted to just beat up on me. You know, when I got there, he was friendly and courteous. And I can't remember her name in Chinega Bay.
So, Jerome, what's Jerome's last name in Kodiak?
Selby.
Selby. Okay.
I think it's S-E-L-B-Y.
Okay.
He was a borough mayor at the time. And Jerome was a realist. I mean, he was pragmatic. I can remember we brought in some enormous amount of boom, 50,000 feet of boom into Kodiak. We came back a year or two later and they couldn't find it. I went up to Jerome, what the hell is going on here? You know, where's all that boom? He finally found it, but when we first got there, we couldn't find it.
Well, we don't have to go on beyond, you know, recording what for you is the most important stuff about the oil spill. So if you think that's it,
you're asking the question. So,
I guess being a woman, I'm concerned about the emotional resonance of how this whole thing affected communities, affected families, affected friendships. Is this something that was so full of fractures that it was irreparable that way?
I don't think the oil industry ever got it. I got it. But I don't think they ever got it. I don't think they ever understood the trauma. They couldn't understand the trauma of Gary Komkoff, who was the chief of the nearest village, having to find out about the oil spill on CNN. They didn't even know how to call him. at the time. Well, they never, and I'm not sure they know about it today. They might. As I said, I don't follow them. Yeah. During my time there, I don't think they ever really got it. Jim Hermeler got it, but they rolled his head out the door. And when I say they roll it out the door, they roll it out with a pretty good package.
Yeah.
So he's taken care of. I was taken care of. So. They're probably not going to like see it, some of this, but that's the way it is. I don't much care.
Yeah. Well, as I say, of course, you'll have the right to edit. So I'm ultimately going to be taking a trip to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I've got several names to pursue down there, but is there anybody that you can think of that would be...
Jeez, I have no idea who's... Steve Dietrich lives in Houston. He mm-hmm. was the... He was a vice president at the time. But I think Steve came in after the oil spill.
Okay. I have an interview tomorrow morning with Greg Jones.
Oh, Greg Jones, good man.
Is he a good man?
Yeah,
okay,
good man.
Good. I'll stop being intimidated.
No, he's straight. He's a good man.
Okay, good.
The guy you should talk to was the commandant of the Coast Guard in Valdez before Greg. I can't remember his name.
Oh, The
captain of the port.
Captain of the port, yeah, McCall.
No, he was the captain of the port at the time of the spill.
Oh, okay.
The guy between McCall, between him and Greg Jones, he's the guy that put together a lot of the training and the unified command, which was an enormous step forward.
Okay. I'll make a note.
Can't remember his name.
Yeah.
I never met anybody at the captain's port position that wasn't absolutely professional and honest and straightforward.
Okay. All right. Well.
All right.
Any closing words?
Keep this place going.
Keep on. Get another one up
on the North Slope.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
They need one.
All right. So.